High of 62. The chance of rain.
Are you ready?
Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
It looks like the Canadians are here.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's my favorite day of the week, First Amendment Friday. We open up the phone lines, and let me start with this. In the very wealthy, very entitled suburb of Redmond, Washington, it's actually its own city, but right outside of Seattle. And just in case you didn't know, Redmond, Washington is a very affluent community because it's the home of the Microsoft Corporation. Not quite as wealthy as, say, Hunts Point, which I'd actually never heard of until recently. No, Hunts Point is really crazy. Median income, 400 grand. Yeah, you got to be a billionaire to live there. But in Redmond, they're a very wealthy community, and I think they think highly of themselves, including, clearly, City Council Member Angie Nueva Camina. Now, Council Member Nueva Camina got her, well, she was upset. She was upset the other day at a City Council meeting, and why? Because she demanded to know from the police chief of this woke community, she was demanding to know of Daryl Lowe, why won't you go out and fight against ICE? And the police chief had to explain, and I'll play some of the exchange between Nueva Camina and the embattled police chief of Redmond, Washington. I wonder exactly how long his tenure is going to be, because when the city council says jump and you say, you know what, I can't do that, that's not allowed under the law. And what does she want, this is Nueva Camina character, what does she want the police chief to do? She wants him to, as she puts it, fight back against ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which is merely doing its job. And the police chief said, no, sorry, can't do that. And I'll tell you what, props and kudos to Chief Daryl Lowe for standing his ground and telling this knucklehead, I mean, that's all you can really do with Angie Nueva Camina is say she's a knucklehead. And yet, I'm going to suggest to you that throughout the Pacific Northwest, in big cities and small, there are a ton of woke liberals who are demanding, we've got to fight back against ICE. In other words, all that sanctuary state status, Oregon has the oldest one in America, dating back to 1987, Washington State not far behind. But for years, they've been saying, we are not going to cooperate with ICE. And apparently that was good enough for them. Except now we've got what the voters voted for. The biggest mass deportation of illegal aliens in American history. That is what Donald Trump promised. Now, am I disappointed in President Trump and some of the things he promised that have not happened? I'd like to see prices for everything go down. Energy has gone down. Well, gasoline has gone down. Electric energy is going up. But groceries are still too expensive. But having said that, what is the one signature thing he promised? The mass deportation to beat all mass deportations in American history. And has he actually delivered on that? Well, as much as the courts and the liberals and his own party have allowed him, the current count is around 2 million people illegally in America who've either been directly deported or who have self-deported. Keep up that rate, and by the end of 4 years, maybe we'll say goodbye to about 8 or 10 million illegal aliens. And maybe that will actually accelerate as Americans see the benefits in the emergency rooms, in their kids' schools, in their taxes, in criminal activity. I think there are going to be benefits. They're going to be tough to quantify, but I think they're going to be there because already we're seeing the housing market ease up as we give the boot to these border hoppers that came into our country at the invitation of Kamala Harris, still planning to run for president again. She hasn't lost enough times yet. And, of course, President Otto Penn, Joe Biden, who didn't really give a damn what he was doing to America when he threw the southern border open. But having said that, let me get back to Redmond, Washington, and let me invite you to the program on a First Amendment Friday. just like every day of the week. We welcome your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we love naysayers on this program. You go right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Send emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. And our X poll today, should we hold AI responsible when a teenager commits suicide and it appears that artificial intelligence drove her to do that? I'll get you the details, but that's the general outline of the lawsuit that's been brought. A number of lawsuits on behalf of six adults and one teenage girl committed suicide and allegedly driven to it by an artificial intelligence program that was released by technology types who knew the dangers of this and cut it loose on society anywhere. So, When the facts lend themselves to this, should we hold AI responsible for a teen's suicide death? I would argue yes. You put it out there. You created the hazard. There it is. You've got to live with it. But let me get back to Redmond, Washington, the very wealthy community of Redmond, Washington, where Angie Nueva Camina, member of the city council, demanded from the police, go out and fight ICE. Take a listen.
Chief, so just very directly and very plainly, so while your department will not do anything to cooperate with ICE, there's also nothing that your department can do to intervene.
And this is the point where, as far as I'm concerned, Chief Daryl Lowe did absolutely the right thing. Probably tough to stand up in front of the people who employ him, but he said, nope, we won't.
Correct. They are operating under federal law and federal authority, and federal law and authority supersedes that of a local jurisdiction. So we would not be able to interfere or intervene in their particular operation.
Can you believe that question was even being asked? Hey, can we get our police department to go out and do battle with a federal police agency? And the only place where Chief Lowe kind of disappointed me, instead of saying federal law supersedes the law of Redmond, Washington, I just wish there was a part of my heart that said, I wish Chief Lowe had said, Councilmember Nueva Camina, federal law trumps Redmond law every day of the week. But Nueva Camina came back at him.
And we've seen in other communities where it's been the community then taking it upon themselves to essentially fight back against ICE in their communities. So basically what we're letting our community know is, hey, from a city perspective, we really can't do anything, and it's upon you then to stand up and fight back against ICE in our communities.
You notice what she's trying to do? She's trying to get the police chief to agree. You're right. We've put our citizens in the position where they have to go out and do physical battle with ICE. And Chief Lowe had to say, no, we're not going to go that direction. Councilmember Nueva Camina, who, by the way, I called this morning to her office. I left a message, have not heard back. I figure Angie Nueva Camina is going to ghost me on this issue. I don't think she wants to talk about it, but Chief Lowe gave her a direct answer.
I can't support or advocate for that. We are here to keep the peace. Individuals have a right to, I'll say, conduct themselves in the manner they see fit, but we cannot support or advocate for, I'll say violence or, fighting against federal agents. Our role is to keep the peace.
But the peace has already been broken, Chief. Thank you.
Yeah, the peace has already been broken. In other words, it's that evil Donald Trump orange man who's insisting that federal law enforcement actually enforce federal law. And now our local police department won't go out and do battle with him. Can you believe this young lady has a position on the city council of a very, very wealthy community in Washington State? I certainly can. It's First Amendment Friday. Your calls are welcome. The Northwest Nonsense is coming up next on the Radio Northwest Network.
Wise words from President Reagan.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us. We the people are the driver. The government is the car. And we decide where it should go.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Well, the Northwest panic and its level of panic over something as ordinary as the cops enforcing the law reached new hysterical heights yesterday. Two Portland schools announced that they had locked down with students inside their buildings. Did an active shooter or a toxic chemical spill prompt this? Nope. Schools acted based, wait for it, on rumors that federal immigration authorities might be in the neighborhood and that they were enforcing immigration law. Now, ICE has made it clear it doesn't raid the schools. Ironically, the lockdowns might just have drawn the very people that ICE likes to hunt down, which is illegal aliens to the outside of those schools, as parents responded to the lockdown. This kind of political theater comes at the expense of your kids, but I'm guessing that most woke Portlanders are not going to object. Let me add it up this way. Americans chose a president by a majority who promised the biggest mass deportation in history. Donald Trump delivered. He's using laws that have been on the books for decades. They've been on the books so long, in fact, that Trump was actually a member of the Democrat Party back when they first passed the Congress. That enforcement enjoys the support of two-thirds of Americans, according to the polls. But schools have taken it upon themselves to scare the daylights out of kids and parents because they don't like the choice that voters made. Local news media then magnifies the message with scary headlines. Imagine the lessons your kids are learning in all this. If you don't like the laws, don't follow them. And in fact, your government institutions will actually stand up and object to them. And you wonder why this country seems so messed up lately. Glad to be with you on a First Amendment Friday. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our question of the day, which is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, and no surgery, and get better fast. Multnomah Medical Clinic. Polsky writes in, Lars, good morning. What are your thoughts? I really think Trump needs to speak directly with the American people in an address on prime time on the real reasons for the government shutdown and how the Democrats are wholeheartedly responsible. Polsky, I think that's a fantastic idea. In fact, it kind of surprises me, given how much Donald Trump loves the cameras, and he does very well in front of the cameras, that he doesn't come out and say, look, let's just talk to the whole country and say, this is a government shutdown that is not necessary. The Democrats have demanded, and apparently the latest deal that we're hearing about today is that Chuck Schumer says, just extend those Obamacare expanded benefits, the ones that were expanded specifically because of the pandemic years ago, the ones that by law go out of existence on New Year's Eve this year, December 31st. Yeah, let's give us 1 year. In other words, they want a consolation prize. I hope the Democrats tell them to pound sand. My favorite post on X today is by journalist Andy Ngo, who says the Oregon Secretary of State has now declined to criminally investigate all the people who illegally voted in the elections. Last year, we found out that more than 1,860 non-citizens were registered to vote, and some of them cast ballots. Democrats control all the power in the state. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
Well, I want to give the Daily Grill today to a guy you probably never heard of, Amani Kelly Kelly. Amani Kelly Kelly was pulling down $131,000 a year as one of the top staffers to a member of the Portland City Council. And then he did something really crazy and stupid, although I can't tell you how many times people have called this show and said, Lars, if people love the homeless so much, why don't they bother to take them into their own homes and see how that works out? The most pointed of those comments I get from people are people who have to deal with the so-called homeless, the mentally ill, the drug addicted, the boozed up illegals homeless that are living on the streets in their neighborhood. And they say it is tough to deal with this in your neighborhood. How would some of those folks at City Hall like to have them in their homes? Well, guess what? Amani Kelly Kelly, who is working for Jamie Dunphy, has now been fired. And why? because Kelly Kelly decided to take a disabled homeless woman into his house. She was there for all of 36 hours. He figured out there was absolutely nothing he could do with her. So what he decided to do was dispose of her. He loaded her up, disabled older woman, drives her out to a park, a state park, 20 miles away from his home, and then unloads her stuff and makes a little fire, warming fire, but leaves her there with no tent, no sleeping bag, no nothing, and just dumps her 20 miles away from his house. Well, he's now been fired. And as far as I'm concerned, it serves him right. He did something truly evil. If he wanted to take on that responsibility, then he had to see it through to the end. The fact that he decided to just dispose of it, and now he's back at City Hall with all the folks telling all of us that the homeless problem is our problem? Yeah, I'll tell you what happens when it comes into your home? Maybe Jamie Dunphy should take a homeless person or two into his home. Our best email of the day, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Cap Concrete Coatings. Turn your garage, patio, or driveway from ugly and rough to beautiful and tough. They did it for me, and it's beautiful. Check out CapConcreteCoatings.com or call 855-CAP-THAT. Kevin writes in, Lars, your caller yesterday complained that he, as a black American, did not have the food heritage of his origin country and noted that Italians have pasta as their heritage. Pasta originated in the Middle East. It then moved to China, primarily as noodles, and then it went to Italy over 1,000 years later. For the typical Italian food in the U.S. today, you have a tomato sauce as a base. The tomato was unknown in Europe and introduced to Europe from the New World of the Americas. Regarding the judge's ruling on SNAP entitlements, would that same judge rule that if we lack the national debt as an entitlement, which means every American must pay well in excess of $100,000 to discharge it? Signed, Kevin. Now to your calls. Let me start with a naysayer, and that's Bruce in Bellingham. Bruce, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What do we disagree about that makes you a naysayer?
Yeah, Lars, I disagree with your response to the daily poll. I think that the AI program should not be responsible. I use Copilot on my computer all the time, and it gets wrong a lot. I would say that I think the responsibility mainly lies with the parents to teach them to think critically.
I think parents should teach kids to think critically, but if you have a computer program that persuades somebody to take his or her own life, and if the creators of that program know of that flaw in the program and know that it's dangerous as a result, do they have any responsibility at all?
Well, when you put it that way, if they knew about it, I would say that yes, they are responsible.
Well, the lawsuit says that the people who created that program knew about the flaw, sent it out on the public anyway, and a young lady took her life, a teenage girl, and six other adults did it. I think they bear some responsibility. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show on First Amendment Friday.
The Lars Larson Show. Portland's just listen for 5 minutes. You'll feel better. More with Lars Larson right now.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a First Amendment Friday. Always glad to get to your phone calls and emails. I want you to see if you can help me figure this one out. We've got the shutdown of the federal government, now the longest in American history, bar none, at about 38 days. And you've got the SNAP benefits that were not being paid. And, of course, there's a lot of attention to that, even though the far bigger effect on the country is that the federal government is shut down. Air traffic control is seriously crippled to the point where just today they decided to cancel about 10% of all the flights in the United States of America. Now, I'm not planning to fly anywhere anytime soon, but that's a big concern. You're helping to cripple a country. And who's doing it? Well, the Democrats are doing it. Who has the power to end it? That would be the Democrats. Do the Republicans have the votes to end it? They do not. I mean, no matter how many times you see a Democrat say, Republicans are in the majority in the House and Senate. Yes, they are. They voted 53 votes in favor of operating the government. The Democrats voted 46 votes against operating the government. They are in the position to fix things. They have chosen not to. But when it comes to SNAP, a federal judge just ordered the Trump administration to pay out SNAP benefits for the month of November. And I know that a lot of Americans will hear that and they'll say, well, yeah, okay, why doesn't he just do it? Let me tell you a very simple reason. The only way that money can be spent by our federal government under the Constitution is if Congress appropriates the money. Now, has Congress appropriated the money to fund SNAP? They have not. Does the U.S. Department of Agriculture that oversees SNAP benefits, do they have an emergency fund? They do. And it's for emergencies. You could imagine circumstances in which the country is hit by a major earthquake, a major civil disaster of some kind, maybe a hurricane, things like that, and that USDA and SNAP need to quickly dispatch food benefits to a region that has been hard hit. Occasionally we have a region that is hit that way. So do we have such an emergency? We don't. We don't have anything other than a self-created emergency by the Democrats. Does that constitute an emergency? And even if you say, well, it's a bad situation and we shouldn't make all these people suffer just because a bunch of nitwit Democrats will not vote to fund the government. Okay, I'll accept that. Let's say for the sake of argument that you say, well, USDA should go ahead and pay the SNAP benefits. Do they have $9 billion just to cover the month of November? We're already on the 7th of November. And then the next question is, and what do they do if this shutdown goes beyond the end of November, goes beyond Thanksgiving? The answer is, well, they will have emptied the emergency cupboard. There's no money left. But do they even have the money to pay out the November benefits? They don't. 1 month of SNAP benefits is $9 billion. What does USDA have? About $5 or $6 billion. They've got two-thirds of the amount of money necessary to fund a full month, and that's only if they spend down all of that money in their emergency fund. Then I'd ask you this, because I know that, and first I want to welcome you. It is First Amendment Friday. If you want to jump in, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you can vote in our X poll. You'll find the question every day at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. But here's the next question. You're going to say, Lars, a federal judge ordered it. Yeah. What do judges get to do? In very simple terms, a judge can say, I'm going to order you to follow the law. Well, what does the current law say about funding SNAP? It says you fund SNAP with money appropriated by the Congress. The Congress has not appropriated the money. The money ain't there. It's like if you said the company should really buy me a new PC or get some new tires for my company each car. Do you have a purchase order? Well, no, I don't, but I still need the tire. Doesn't matter. Without a PO, you don't go anywhere. That's how things work in an organization, especially when that organization is run under the U.S. Constitution, which says money can only be spent by who? By the United States Congress. Can a president, can any president say, I've decided to spend a bunch of money on something? Nope. Not unless the Congress appropriated it. How about the judges? Can the judges order that? I guess they can order it, but do they have the authority? And then I'd ask you this question. If a federal judge can order a president to do something that is not in the law, so the judge is inventing some law, which judges are not supposed to do, could that same judge order obstinate Democrats to get back up there on Capitol Hill, and the senators especially, and vote to pass a working budget? Now, I can just hear some of you saying, well, Lars, a judge can't order a member of Congress, an elected official, to vote for something. He can't? Why not? This judge has already decided he has the power to order a president to do something that is not required by the law. I mean, is one thing if a judge says it appears clear the law here says this official, governor, mayor, whatever, has to do it because the law says so. I've decided the law says so. There is no law to fund SNAP unless the Congress passes it. It's called an appropriations bill, or in this case, a continuing resolution. They have not passed the law. So the judge is ordering the president to do something that the law doesn't say. It could say it if six or seven Democrats went back to the Senate and voted yes on the CR, but they've said they won't. So, you know, in that case, you can't order the government to do something as a judge unless it's covered by the law or the Constitution. This one's covered by neither one. And yet this judge, John McConnell Jr., who's in Rhode Island, has decided he's got the authority to direct the actions of the government. And that's an outrageous idea in and of itself. Let me go to, let's go to Anita. Hey, Anita, welcome to the Lars Larson Show on First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Hi there. Well, I just found out, which totally just blew my mind, that congressmen and senators are still collecting their salaries.
They are. That's in the law. That's in the law.
So, like, that doesn't make any damn sense. I'm sorry. I cut.
Well, you can say that. It doesn't make any damn sense. But I will tell you this, Anita. Are members of Congress still doing the job right now? Not the job the way they should do it, but are they still working?
I don't see any results of that, but I
no,
guess
I understand that, but Congress often works without results in it, if you might have noticed.
Yeah.
But no, I know there are people who think we could solve this whole problem by cutting these jokers off from their paychecks. Anita, two things you should take into account. Are you a millionaire?
No.
Neither am I. Most members of Congress are millionaires, and they get paid about, after taxes, probably about $12,000 a month. Do you think the average multimillionaire is worried about paying the rent when he doesn't get his $12,000 paycheck?
No, he's not.
He's not. Or she's. Either he or she.
He or she.
Yeah, and so if you cut off their paychecks, I know it sounds stupid, but really, who at this point can make the decision to fire the government back up on all cylinders or as close to as possible?
Our Democratic people.
Yeah. The members of Congress. So they could argue, I'm still on the job. I'm making decisions. In this case, the Democrats have said, we're making a decision by refusing to make a decision. And they're saying, we're going to keep the government shut down because they think it's their political benefit. Now, Chuck Schumer's latest offer is this. During the pandemic, they dramatically expanded Obamacare subsidies. They said, it's an emergency. We've got to do it. But it runs out at the end of this year on December 31. Now, that's the law right now. Schumer and his buddies have said, we want you to indefinitely expand or extend that expansion of benefits to the tune of about $300 billion a year. Republicans have said no. God bless them. In this case, they actually did the right thing. And so now Schumer is apparently coming back saying, extend it 1 year and we'll let the government operate again. You know why he wants it 1 year, Anita? Next November is another major election. And they want to have this fight during an election year. And they find themselves not having the fight during an election year. And they want to hold the Republicans' feet to the fire next fall. Anita, thanks so much for the call. Back in a moment. It's First Amendment Friday, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
You don't have to. Bringing the political heat. He's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. There's a story I really wanted to share with you, and I really don't have a direct dog in the fight other than, let's see, I was taking my wife and my adult stepdaughter out for a little shopping, you know, some antique shopping. They like to go out and poke around in various places and try to find what they can find in the way of old stuff. I mean, I guess I'm not old enough to qualify as an antique, but I'm getting there. And so we stopped at a place and just used the restroom, buy a cup of coffee. And I said, what do you guys sell? And he said, cheesecakes. That's all we sell is cheesecakes. And I heard the story. And then it happened that pop up on my Instagram feed, the story about beloved cheesecakes. And I thought, why don't I get this young lady on to tell the story? Because it's really kind of amazing. Jen Jacobson Brusa joins me now. Other than that, I have no direct dog in the fight or connection to this. But I find your story fantastic. Jen, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Lars. I didn't even know that you got to stop in our shop. That's awesome.
I did. And one of your great employees told me, they'll say, oh, you're not going to believe this. It started with a flat of blackberries. So why don't we start with this? I mean, I guess we can skim past the you left a bad marriage. You wanted your boys.
Yes.
You had to provide for them. And you didn't have a direct way to do that. You worked a bunch of different jobs. And then somebody gave you a flat of blackberries. And what happened next?
Yeah. So I was part of Gleaners in Clackamas County, and that's where I got that flat of blackberries. And I made a blackberry cheesecake for my kids' school just to thank them for everything that they had helped us with. And never had made one before. Didn't even know how to take it off the cheesecake pan. I had to YouTube it. And I presented it to the kids, my kids' school staff. And the next day, the secretary is like, Jen, who made the cheesecake? And or where did you get it? And I just told her I made it. She's like, this is the best cheesecake we've ever had. And I was like, really? And that's what started my journey of making cheesecakes.
Well, and what's funny is you mentioned gleaning. Gleaning's an idea that what's hundreds of years old, that farmer would go out and harvest most of what was in the field. And then they'd say, okay, you can, any of you want to, people are down and out, can go out and pick the rest. And that's what gleaning is, isn't it?
Yes. Yep. Just like, I believe it was Ruth, right?
Yeah.
I think in the Bible. Yep.
and very much your business is very much a faith-based business, isn't it?
Very much. Yes. Yes. We love Jesus. We love America. We're not ashamed of either.
So now what happened after that? Because you didn't immediately go out and just open up a store, but within a couple of years of that experience, the winter of 2015, you said, hey, maybe I could do this for a living. You started making custom cheesecakes for people, and pretty soon you're getting orders from all over America?
Pretty much. Started with, hey, can you donate a cheesecake to a school auction? And I said, sure. And then that's really what started it after that Christmas. And someone called me from the auction and said that the cheesecake went for $250. I was like, are you kidding me? But yeah, it just became a little side hustle. And I went through a school of social work at PSU and thought I was going to become a social worker. And God had different plans, and a Kickstarter was started for me. And my boys and I opened up Beloved Cheesecakes in Silverton in August of 2019. And then we know what happened 8 months later was the lockdown. So,
and by the way, when the lockdown came, what did Jen Jacobson Bruza and Beloved Cheesecakes say about the lockdown?
We said, sorry, I'm essential. You know, I was a sole parent to three boys at the time, and I'd worked really hard. I was on the EBT card, on the SNAP card, for about 5 years, and I worked really hard to get off of it. And when I got off of it, and then now the lockdown happened, you're telling me that I have to get back on the EBT card. And so anyways, I chose to stay open. I let people make the decision if they wanted to come in with mask or maskless, whatever. We didn't do the masks, and got a lot of backlash from it, but also got a lot of love from it as well.
I was going to say, I'm talking to Jen Jacobson Bruce, and don't forget, it's Beloved Cheesecakes. And again, I don't have a dog in the fight. I do like cheesecake. But tell me this. What did people say to you about you shouldn't be open, or you shouldn't be providing for your son?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you got to follow the rules. You know how it is nowadays. And they would turn me into OSHA. I was turned into OSHA six different times. And I just had a sign on my window that said, we're a constitutionally compliant business. We accept you if you're masked or maskless, if you're vaxxed or vaxxless, whatever gender you identify with, whatever religion you are, whatever race you are. We don't care. We just want to serve you cheesecake. And some people love that, and there are a lot of people here in Oregon that didn't like that.
No, and you've drawn attention from people like Kirk Cameron. We know him, Fox and Friends, and the others. How big is the business now?
We have two locations. We have our main location in Albany, and then that's where we do all the baking, shipping, and receiving, and also have a storefront there. And then we have a second location in Canby. That's just retail. We are also in all the Zupans market. We are also in Newport Avenue Market in Bend, and we ship all over the nation. So our shipping has increased. Oh my gosh, it's really increasing. So we've been shipping a lot. So that's like our third store, I guess, is the online presence.
Well, maybe what you need to do is start a sideline in social work and say, look, you don't have to be on the SNAP card. You don't have to be on benefits. You can go out and start a business like I did. What do you think?
Amen. Oh, yeah. I try to encourage a lot of people that way. You know, it's not, I was embarrassed to be on it. I was grateful for it. Absolutely. Grateful to have the hand up, I guess, or the, I don't,
know if it was a handout for me, but I didn't ever plan on being on it forever.
I think that's a good plan. Jen Jacobson-Brusa is the founder of Beloved Cheesecakes, two stores and shipping to the whole United States of America and growing. Thank you, Jen. You've got the Lars. Lars.
Are you ready?
Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
It looks like the Canadians are here.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get you your phone calls and emails, and we'll do that in just a moment. There's an issue I want to talk about involving ChatGPT. I'm not a user of ChatGPT. I've got a very deep level of suspicion when it comes to artificial intelligence. I'm sure that there are plenty of positive things it can be used for, and yet all of the unintended consequences, well, consider this. ChatGPT allegedly sweet-talked seven people into committing suicide, including six adults and one teenager with no prior mental health issues. When AI becomes your therapist, who's liable for the body count? Thought we'd consult with our friend, the former DA and former vice president of the National DA's Association. That's Josh Marquis. Josh, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Lars. It's a very interesting issue, and we need to remember that the artificial intelligence companies that exist are private companies.
Yeah.
And so some of these lawsuits are alleging that they've essentially made it too easy. And some of the conversations are really, really disturbing. I'm reading one where, in this case, a 23-year-old man says, I'm about to do it. And the ChatGPT says, all right, brother, this is, you know, Godspeed, rest easy, King, you did good. And then the guy shoots himself. And then, of course, the most disturbing is the case involving the teenager. And the problem is that AI, particularly the AI that is set up, is intended to constantly give encouragement to the subject. So instead of saying, that's a really stupid idea, don't do it, or probably the wisest thing would be to say, and this was they originally were programmed to say, is, can't discuss that. It's a company. They don't want people to leave. They don't want the users to leave. And of course, ChatGPT has no soul. It doesn't believe in anything. And whatever your religious beliefs are, it's pretty clear that ChatGPT is not connected to anything with a soul or an intelligence, a real intelligence.
Well, let me ask you Josh, is that when you have a company, as you point out, it's a private company, and you produce a product, and you're aware that the product has potential misuses, and then you say, yeah, let's release it anyway. I mean, there are some crazy, every time I bought a ladder, it's covered with warnings written on it. I'm sure by the company's lawyers.
Don't stand on this on one foot. Yeah.
Don't stand on this on one foot. Don't grab an electrical cable with bare wires while you're up on the ladder. I mean, all kinds of stupid stuff. And yet when it comes to OpenAI, apparently they say, we know it's got all those problems. We even know it might actually talk people into doing really crazy or stupid or even deadly things. Go ahead. Send it out to the public. Let's see how it works out. That doesn't seem responsible, does it?
No, it doesn't. And clearly, I mean, there are uses for artificial intelligence, but it is in the really early stages. And at this point, what it's able to do is basically give you information that it's not able to basically counsel you on a moral basis. And because it's not a human being and it doesn't really have interaction, although many of the inexperienced users really sort of fooled themselves into thinking they're talking to an actual interactive intelligence. That's not what it is. It's programmed, and it's programmed to come back. We're going to affirm you. I mean, that's one of the things that's wrong with this. You know, you're doing the right thing. You're on the right road, brother. Well, not if you're a 16-year-old about to blow your brains out or hang yourself.
Well, Josh, when you said all it's programmed to do is give you information, if that were true, if somebody, you know, went to an online source and said, I want to know about suicide. Well, suicide is committed by a very small number of people. It's usually an irrational, it's always an irrational act. It's not a good idea. That would be information. But this thing actually encourages you one way or the other. And seemingly it doesn't say, I think I want to talk you out of doing that. It says, yeah, go for it. And
why? Because it's a company, and it's trying to, it doesn't want to lose the potential customer. One of the things, it's the same problem that we're facing with the ubiquitousness of cell phones and the internet. We may need to set up something where it's simply not available to people under the age of maybe 16 or even 18. I mean, just in the same way we don't let 18-year-olds buy 16-year-olds buy firearms, and we don't allow them to buy alcohol,
But in 6 of the 7 cases, these were adults who were allegedly talked into suicide. Maybe this isn't safe at any age.
Well, I don't think it's fair to say they were talked into suicide. The problem is that they were led to believe or came to believe, maybe partly because they just didn't understand, that they were talking to another genuine intelligence that was, except it was encouraging them to do whatever it is they wanted to do. It's sort of this idea. And we think about the problems in schools today and other things. You're doing great. You know, everybody gets an A or a B. Well, no, sometimes people have really bad ideas, but in particularly American society, we have not sort of adapted to the idea of sometimes these are really bad ideas and stupid ones, and we don't want to set up something where some poor, deluded, either 16-year-old or 23-year-old, as you point out, can just go online and be reassured that, it's a really good idea. This one case is very disturbing. I'm looking at it. It's involving a 23-year-old where he puts a gun in his mouth while he's talking to ChatGPT. And, all right, brother, let it be known, you did the right thing. Rest easy, King. You did good. That's the AI talking back to him.
Let me ask you, about a decade ago, there was a woman, I think she was in Texas, Michelle Carter, and she talked her boyfriend, her former boyfriend.
It was Massachusetts, actually.
Oh, it was Massachusetts. And she texted to him and encouraged him to commit suicide. She was convicted of involuntary manslaughter. Should the company that sets one of these loose, she was convicted of involuntary manslaughter.
And did about two years in prison.
I get that, but at least we held her responsible. Should we do the same with companies that set a dangerous technology like this loose on the public?
Well, if they don't provide, I think that I'm not sure if you could criminally prosecute them, but they're probably less worried about that than being sued. And no, they shouldn't be protected from lawsuits, because, there are vulnerable populations, and it's in exactly the same way as you say, whether it's a ladder or a firearm or an automobile or any number of other things. We try to build in things so we don't encourage.
So we don't hurt people. And Josh, to me, they've made an attractive nuisance, like digging a hole in your yard that fills up with rainwater. And when the neighborhood kids come to play, yeah, you're responsible. Well,
he has small town politics with big town opinions. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to Lars Larson Show on First Amendment Friday. Glad to be with you and always glad to talk about. There's a crazy number of issues to talk about today. But I invite your phone calls. If you want to say, if you want to weigh in, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. The X poll, should we hold AI responsible for a teen's suicide death and the deaths of six other adults who allegedly committed suicide, having been effectively talked into it by ChatGPT or OpenAI and GPT-40, that they committed suicide because the artificial intelligence encouraged them to do it. I would say, yeah, hold the AI responsible. If you could establish that the program was such that it encouraged somebody to commit suicide and they then did commit suicide and died, yeah, hold the creators of the program responsible. Today's X-Poll can be found at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Hey, Jennifer, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Oh, my gosh. I've been on hold for...
Jennifer.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. What's on your mind?
I've been on hold so long. Let me think. Okay, so I called in for one reason, but several things have come up since I've been listening. But I would just say, on a positive note, as the king is starving his people, or the community here in Portland, food banks, the community stepping up to help people that need to be fed, veterans, kids, elderly.
Who's the king that you refer to that's starving his people? Is that Chuck Schumer?
Oh, come on.
No, I'm asking you.
And it's also
Jennifer,
you know who I'm talking about, the king.
Jennifer, I'm being
and
serious.
Also,
I'm taking you, unless you don't want me
to
take you seriously.
You want me to say Trump? I'll say
no,
Trump.
No, I want you
I'll
to know.
Trump.
So what power does Donald Trump have to fund food stamps?
So also, the king.
You're just
going to
ignore my questions, aren't you, Jennifer? Jennifer, I like to have,
together.
I respond to people very well. I will answer any question you want. But Jennifer,
like
I want to be able
that
to ask you questions.
Between Democrats and Republicans.
Jennifer, are you going to engage in a conversation? Because I will. If you ask me anything you want.
Well, I hold, and then I get interrupted. I can't, complete a sentence. So,
no.
Yes, I will answer your question.
You said the king was starving his people, and I want to know which king you're referring to. I thought you were talking about Chuck Schumer in New York.
Well, I already said Trump. But I already said Trump.
And then I ask you a serious question. Does Donald Trump have the power to fund the government? He doesn't.
Donald Trump has the ability to release funds, yes.
No, he doesn't.
And I know you already had the conversation.
Jennifer, he does not. USDA has $6 billion in an emergency fund. Is it an emergency when Democrats say they will not vote to fund the government?
An emergency is, you are out of touch if you don't think that people being hungry is a big deal.
I think it's a big deal, but I'm asking you, Jennifer, when the government says we're going to set this money aside for an emergency, that means That means something like a hurricane, an earthquake, a civil disaster.
That means people are starving. The richest land in the world, people shouldn't be hungry. That this is an emergency. That's
there are jobs available. Have you thought about that?
And there's what?
There are.
You're
jobs.
Out of touch. You don't understand.
I'm out of touch that there are jobs available.
You don't understand.
What
you
do I not understand?
That a disabled vet should go get
I'm
a
not
job.
Talking about disabled vets.
Is that what you think?
The
you
one big Jennifer, the
job?
One big Jennifer just likes to talk over it. The one big beautiful bill said we're going to cut people off from SNAP if they are able-bodied, of working age, they're not children, they're not seniors, and they're not disabled, and they are do not have a job at least 20 hours a week. You don't get SNAP benefits. That's one of the issues the Democrats are unhappy about. The second one is
that's what Republicans think. They think. That's exactly how out of touch Republicans are.
Well, no,
that's
but Jennifer, why is it out
not
of touch to say, why is it, let me ask you a question, why is it out of touch
because
to
it's
say?
It's just like the transgender athlete.
You want to change the subject now to something else, Jennifer?
You make
because
a small group
are you,
of
you're
people.
Losing on
you
one subject,
small,
so you change the subject to something else. Jennifer, this is it. I don't think it's that entertaining, so I'm going to move on. But if you say this is what Republicans think, do Republicans think that able-bodied citizens who are childless and do not have a disability and are of working age should work at least 20 hours a week to qualify for SNAP? They do. Do the Republicans say we're willing to fund SNAP, and the Democrats have said no, we're going to vote against having funding for the government? And that's what they did. Now, those are the people you and people like you, Jennifer, voted for. You voted for a bunch of knuckleheads who said, we don't want the current funding of the government. We want $1.4 trillion more. And the Republicans said, no, we're in enough debt already. Let's have a status quo budget. Let's go to Mark, who's an ace here. Mark, are you willing to actually engage in a conversation just out of curiosity?
I like to think so.
Okay, go for it.
So I sent you an email, and you invited me to call in.
Yeah,
and,
call in. What's up?
I probably don't remember.
Okay, but here's the thing, Mark. Nobody in my audience has read the email you sent me. Why don't you just make your point and tell me what we disagree about that makes you a naysayer?
No, that's fine. So you and your guest were talking about Tucker Carlson, and it seemed like you agreed with Tucker's viewpoint
on what?
On the Israel situation.
No,
and
I never said that.
Oh, okay, that's fine.
So you misunderstood. What I said was Carlson had brought on this Nick Fuentes character, who I think sounds like an execrable human being, but you can have anybody you want on your show. I've had terrible people on my show, too. Instead of making points about what I think or don't think, why don't you tell me what's on your mind?
Oh, I'm just trying to learn, that's all. I'm not really an
expert. What would you like to learn?
What
would you like to learn?
Oh, I thought that you had maybe an alternate point. Because Seton Motley brought up the nickname that Catarlson, you know, that nickname. I won't mention who. So it sounded like you disagreed with the guy who gave him that nickname, and him and along with other people who seemed to me to
now
know
I'm,
what they're
I'm
talking.
Lost. Mark, I have no idea what you're talking about. And I bet my audience has no idea either.
Okay, I just thought maybe you agreed that people called Carlson an anti-Semite, and I thought you maybe disagreed with his, and I'm not even an expert on.
All we're talking about is whether or not I agree with another host. I know Carlson in passing. He's been on the show years ago a few times. He's now got his own gig. I don't know why that's, I don't agree with him on a lot of the things he's done recently, and I understand why he's on the outs with people, because he's both brought on some really terrible people and apparently endorsed their point of view, like Fuentes, and I couldn't agree with Fuentes about just about anything.
Okay, thank you.
Does that answer your question?
I wanted your point. Absolutely.
Okay.
It was easy, right? So.
Yeah. It's always easy. The only thing that's not easy, Mark, and I'll say this for the benefit of everybody else listening, when people call up and say, you believe X, don't tell me what I believe. Most of the time when people quote me, they quote me completely wrong, and I can prove it because all of my shows are recorded and all of them are posted online at LarsLarson.com. So don't misquote me and don't assume you know what I think, because unless I said it out loud, you don't.
The Lars Larson Show. Unwrapping the news so you don't have to. Back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, Donald Trump has slammed the brakes on illegal alien truckers getting CDLs, but is banning foreign drivers going to shift America's supply chain into reverse? Because one of the things that I think most Americans would agree with, especially when they see horrific videos of 18-wheelers that weigh anywhere from, say, close to 90,000 pounds to well over 100,000 pounds, that go down the freeway at 50, 60, 70 miles an hour, and they are incredibly heavy, and they're incredibly dangerous if not run by a really professional CDL driver. And then all of a sudden you find out we've got drivers who didn't actually take the training, who didn't legitimately qualify for the license, who can't speak the language, who can't read the language, and apparently some of them on drugs, like the horrific video from about 3 weeks ago of a man in Southern, I think it was Southern California in this case. He had a dash cam operating when he plowed into a line of vehicles and just obliterated a bunch of human beings, including some whose cars immediately caught fire and incinerated the people inside. And you say, why that happened? I said, well, my first clue would be that while legitimate American CDL drivers occasionally do make horrific errors and kill people, when there seems to be a pattern of people who don't read the language, write the language, speak the language, understand the language, don't really have a real CDL, that's a problem. So I thought we'd talk about it with Mike Kucharski, our friend who's the co-owner and vice president of JKC Trucking. Hey, Mike, welcome back to the program.
Lars, thank you for having me on your show again.
Is there a simple reason that we have all these non-English-speaking, non-CDLs with fake CDLs on the road these days?
So this is a very serious crisis issue because there's a loophole of not only unlicensed but inexperienced CDL drivers endangering the motoring public. Two main issues, safety and liability. And as somebody who has worked in the trucking industry for three decades, I could say that safety, integrity, and accountability is at the heart of everything we value and how we should move forward as a country, because the trucking industry is not only the heartbeat of America, it's the heartbeat of America, of the U.S. economy, excuse me. And the DOT actions to tighten its oversight of non-domicile CDL programs, drivers, is a necessary step. And I want to, thank Sean Duffy for stepping in and putting a spotlight on the president.
That's
of these
the Transpo Secretary,
operating.
In case you're missing, but Sean Duffy is the Transpo Secretary. Will you explain to my audience what is a non-domiciled CDL, just so I make sure I understand as well?
Okay, so, and others, if I'm correct, so a non-domiciled CDL driver is somebody that doesn't live in the U.S., has come from a different country. For example, you were talking about the gentleman that killed all those people in Ontario, California.
Yep.
He crossed the border. Somehow I don't know how he crossed the border legally or through the app. He then, obviously is non-domiciled, non-documented driver, gets a CDL license in California, which is crazy because there's so many steps in place, fail-safes, to get a CDL. Like, let's say you and I go get a CDL. It's going to take us months to get a CDL. It's not an easy thing to get. This guy got a CDL, put him in a truck, started driving, and disaster happened. And four people had to lose their lives because of this person.
Well, it's funny, Mike, because I'll tell you, if I have a dog in the fight, I've got a brother-in-law, Lee. He's got a CDL. It took him months, and he was already a guy used to driving big rigs, but he was driving his own, like dump trucks and other things like that. And as long as he drove for himself, he wasn't required to get a CDL. But then he went and got the CDL. As you said, there's a medical exam. There's a test you have to take, both driving and written test. You've got to qualify to be able to do this, even though he'd been doing it for years, but he was doing it legally for years. Because if I went out and bought, I guess, Mike, you know the law better than I do. If I went out and bought myself a big old dump truck, I could drive it down the road as long as I'm not doing it for hire and I'm not working for another company. I can drive my own equipment on the highway, correct?
Correct. If you have your own equipment, work for a construction company, yes, that is an option. Just to give an idea, the trucking industry depends on trust. The trust, that means making sure that every driver on the road is properly licensed, well-trained, mentally, physically fit to operate heavy equipment,
Yep.
I keep saying we also have to continue how we vet drivers, train drivers, invest in compliance systems, and create pathways for, lawful, qualified individuals to join the profession. It's about human lives, and it's on all of us, from regulators to fleet owners to driver trainers, to ensure system works the way it should be.
Well, and then I saw, Mike, that the Postal Service, which has long-haul trucks as well, because they're moving massive amounts of mail around, not just by air, but also on the roads, and they tried to ban immigrant truck drivers from working for the U.S. Postal Service, an independent government agency, and they found out they couldn't do it, right, because they ran out of drivers.
You mean, I saw that article. I didn't read into it, but yes, I did see something about the Postal Service. And the workers, but how about this? The rule is, look, how's this? There's a vast majority of these drivers are professionals. They're doing the right thing every day.
Yep.
And the trucking business, the trucking business is overregulated. We're overregulated. We jump through all these hoops. You know, I can't hire a driver that's 2 years, that has less than 2 years experience. My insurance keeps going up every year, 20%. Don't know why, you know, and this could happen. You know, this shouldn't be happening. You know, this is not Canada. You know, we didn't import all these
drivers. Okay, Mike, let me cut in for a second. You have to pay all this insurance. Do you suspect that some of the people who get into these gigantic accidents, like the guy in Ontario, California, who, as I understand it, had just turned 21, he was barely old enough to be a cross-border CDL. Do you suspect that a lot of these companies are just running bare for liability and figure, we kill somebody, they're going to be suing an empty LLC or a corporation that doesn't have any insurance?
Of course, you know, I don't know all the details, but if I had to guess what happened with this driver got a CDL. He went to somewhere where they leased to own a truck for him. Those people said, look, we're going to lease you this truck. You're going to have, this is going to be your payment. We're going to take care of your insurance. They probably even gave him loads. So they gave him the whole package deal. And they're like, if it works, if it doesn't, no big deal. No sweat off our back. We'll move to the next one. And that's not how business should be done. Because number one, safety, and then there's another problem we're dealing. We're still dealing with volume volatility in the trucking business. Volumes are down, rates are down, and then now that these foreign truck drivers came in, they undercut the low rates that there are, and you're seeing the demise of the trucking industry.
So, they're going to drive a lot of legitimate truckers, either owner operators or companies that do it. They're going to drive them out of business because we got this cheap illegal who'll drive the truck for us, and we're not insuring him. So if he kills somebody, they'll be suing nobody. But we're going to undercut your rates, and we're going to drive you and your friends right out of the business who do have all the things you need to be legit.
That is happening every day. You see it in the papers every day. Trucking company has been around for 20, 40, 60 years. They put in multiple generations of truckers, put in blood, sweat, and tears, and went out of business overnight because of something like this.
Yeah, and I have a feeling that's why your rates are going up 20% a year. Mike, you're covering the cost of everybody else, just like the rest of us civilian drivers who have regular insurance. Say, why is my uninsured motorist coverage so high? Well, because you're paying for everybody who's chosen to go uninsured.
Correct. It's affecting all of us. You know, it's almost kind of a scam, because why is the rest of us truckers paying for the bottom of the barrel? And the bottom of the barrel, this should have never happened in the first place. And I really hope there should be four people accountable. Number one, the gentleman that got the license. You knew you shouldn't have gotten a license. Number two, the trucking company that hired him. Number three, the government that gave him license. Excuse me, that should have been number two. And then number four, the company that gave him coverage. Because for myself, it's so hard to cover my truck drivers, and they just gave it to this guy and looked the other way.
Yeah, I think that's going to stop under Duffy and under President Trump. That's Mike Kucharski, co-owner and vice president of JKC Trucking. Mike, thanks very much. Back in a moment, I'll get to your phone calls and emails. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Well done.
Do you realize you can literally have Lars with you all day, every day? Podcasts at Spotify, Apple, SoundCloud, and live right now. What a time to be alive. Here's Lars.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on First Amendment Friday, live on the Radio Northwest Network, which serves and has served the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho for the past almost 30 years with honestly provocative talk. This segment of the show is brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home right now. No showing, no hassles, and you pick the closing date. Go to NickShivers.com for details. Our X poll today: should we hold AI, artificial intelligence programs, responsible, and by that I mean the companies behind them, for a teenager's suicide death and the suicides of six adults who also took their own lives after interacting with ChatGPT? There are lawsuits, seven of them right now, that claim ChatGPT drove people to suicide and harmful delusions even when they had no prior mental health issues. The X-Poll, I would say, yeah, we should hold the companies behind AI responsible. You'll find it at Lars Larson Show and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Let's go to Ron in Eagle Point. Hey, Ron, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
You bet, Lars. Thank you. Well, relative to the current budget impasse, Democrats want to market this as the mean Republicans are doing this. Republicans respond back where we have concerns about illegal aliens receiving benefits. And we can expound on that with NGOs and the untraceability of funds once they're designated to the non-government organizations. But I thought about this, and it's like, well, wait a second. If Democrats have a concern and Republicans have a concern, why not wipe the slate completely clean, require all benefits of SNAP, EBT, whatever,
yep,
to show up in person with photo ID, start the registration all over? Why would Democrats object to that?
They would, because they understand that this is going to undercut what they're doing. And, Ron, I'm being honest about it. I know there are times that both sides probably exaggerate what the other side is doing. But, Ron, what you're talking about, they know in their heart of hearts that the system is being gamed by a lot of people. And I would argue this, as long as we have a system in which America has said, I think it's a generous thing for a country to do, to say, we know there are people who are in need. And there are 1,000 different ways you could end up in need. You could be a widow, you know, who lost her husband unexpectedly, has 2 or 3 kids, has all these responsibilities. Okay, we should help her out. We have a disabled vet who's older. We have a child who falls into foster care or some other kind of care. That child, everybody would agree, yeah, you should help that situation out. I'm not telling the 8-year-old kid, hey, go out and get a paper route, get your own grocery money. I'm not doing that. But if you really care about making that system work, should you equally care about not having the system get cheated? That is, by fraud, and SNAP has a ton of fraud built into it. I mean, I would take the little stores that go and buy people's EBT points, basically. There are no more coupons. But if somebody walks in to your store and they come to find out, if you go to Ron's store in Eagle Point, I'm not indicting you, and you say, hey, Ron, take $100, pretend I bought $99.62 worth of groceries, and you get $50 and I get $50. And you know that you can turn the EBT receipt in for $100 cash from the government, and you're putting $50 in your pocket, and you're putting, or you're getting $100 back, and you're putting $50 in that guy's pocket. So it's a scam. If you catch somebody doing that, they are banned from working at any, you know, if they're running a business, that business is going to be taken to the cleaners by the government. That's not unreasonable, because then you're protecting the benefit for the people it's truly intended for. And if you have more money in that system, you can say, well, maybe now we can give better benefits if that's what you want to do. Maybe we'll find some cases that are especially sympathetic. The 92-year-old retired woman, you know, who's trying to get by on her husband's pension from 40 years ago, and it's $300 a month, and she's starving. Okay, give her some more. But if you want to protect that, you have to make sure that all the fraud artists get taken apart. You know, they have to go to jail. They have to be indicted, they have to be punished, and they have to be banned from the system. And if you find out that we've identified individuals who've actually sold their EBT dollars instead of using them for groceries, then, you know, those people are banned from the system. Say, you're off the system. Maybe it's for 3 years, maybe it's for 5 years, maybe it's for life. Whatever the details are, I think you know, and re-qualifying everyone. Bring people in and say, okay, how much money are you making? Well, I'm doing pretty good, $40,000 a year. Well, when you went on SNAP, you were only making $20,000 a year. You qualified then, you don't qualify now. You're off. And I would use every resource. I'd use the IRS. I'd use the Department of Revenue and the state that person's in and say, we're going to find people who are gaming the system, and they may be banned from the system for life. Do you think that'd be unreasonable?
No. As a matter of fact, what you're recommending is a filter to reinforce viability of the program itself and stop the inefficiency and the bleeding that, sorry to use that term, the non-functional use of the program. But
yep.
It always amazes me at the flexibility and creativity of graft.
You're not kidding. Ron, thank you very much. It's First Amendment Friday. It's the Lars Larson Show, and you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. Honestly, provocative talk.
The Lars Larson.
Are you ready?
Friday, Friday, Friday. Get him out by Friday.
Friday night fever.
Yes, Friday. Woo!
Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
It looks like the Canadians are here.
866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show on First Amendment Friday. I've been looking forward to talking to J.D. Hayworth, who's a former six-term U.S. congressman from Arizona, a veteran broadcaster, and of course he may have a dog in the fight when it comes to GLP-1 weight loss drugs. But J.D., welcome back to the program. How are you?
Hey, Lars, great to be with you. Thanks so much for the invitation to come back.
Well, I want to tell you that I'm a little bit confused. I want all pharmaceuticals to come down in cost, but I've explained before that my primary way of doing that is say, if you're going to sell drugs that cost a lot of money to develop, sell them to Americans at the same price you sell them to the rest of the world. In other words, we ought to be if not the favored buyers, at least treated equally. And yet my impression is that a lot of the pharma companies, most of which are based in the United States, they do their research here. They say, we're going to sell to Americans at a stratospheric price and then give it away to a bunch of socialist countries like Canada and like the UK, like Germany and France and other countries, and say, you guys get the smoking deal while our home country gets to pay the most. Number one, that kind of violates the standard rule in retailing or any other kind of business where you say our best customers, they get to pay the best price, you know, and not the worst price. And yet it seems to be kind of the opposite of that. And I really don't understand why, you know, Donald Trump yesterday, who I support and I voted for and I support, but I also disagree with him when I feel it's necessary. They reached a deal to dramatically cut the cost of these GLP-1 weight loss drugs, Wegovy and Zepbound. I don't use either one, don't have any plans to either, and cut them from, you know, as much as $350. They go from $1,000 a month down to, say, $50 to $350. And it always makes me suspicious when there's a cost cut like that. Well, then who's paying more if we're paying less? And is this a good deal at the end of the day?
Well, let's understand this. First of all, what you outlined is the very reason Donald Trump wanted to take action and has been taking action in the executive. Simply stated, if you're going to put America first, it doesn't mean first paying the most. It means first in paying less. And so you've outlined the goal. Now, to get there, it gets a little complicated. And you've also pointed out something that we need to explore. First of all, let's give the president credit. I mean, he got these companies to the table and he got some work done. And though you may not need these GLP-1 drugs, the so-called weight loss drugs, let's face it. As a guy who's been fighting the battle of the bulge, gosh, I had my middle-aged friend at three. Others of us need some help. And so they're reacting to that. And yes, in terms of price point, it is dramatic. Now here, this is where the challenge comes in the details. Big Pharma's been around the block. And so with this deal, which has some merit, but with this deal, there's also a suspicion that what they do is they open another pipeline of customers, Medicare, Medicaid, Trump Rx, and what happens is, yeah, the initial price points are way low, but as we've seen for a lot of people, the dosage of those weight control drugs, the GLP-1, it goes up. If you increase the dosage, the prices increase. So the challenge comes to make sure it's not a PR stunt that that Big Pharma is taking a victory lap here, saying, look, we're beneficent, we're cooperating, and then giving us the runaround in the long term. Sure, that's a legitimate criticism, but it doesn't cancel out the president's intent and the fact that in hard-nosed negotiating, which I told you Trump would do, there is a benefit. You just got to stay on top of it.
I mean, and that's before, J.D., we even get to the question of how is it that Trump, who chose RFK Jr., who I'm not a fan of, but he's probably done some good things, like almost everybody, no matter how much you might disagree, has done some good things. But he's Mr. All Natural and let's get all the dyes out of foods and things like that. And all of a sudden we're telling people it doesn't matter. You don't have to go out and lose weight this way. You can go out and lose weight by rather than cutting back your intake and going for a walk now and then. We'll just give you a drug and that'll fix the problem right now. Does not sound like the kind of thing RFK Jr. would sign on for.
Well, look, there are, when you're looking at the number of Americans now affected by obesity,
yep,
and the numbers have gone up, and you know, it was all public knowledge. I went through a surgical solution, what, 2 decades ago?
Yeah.
The change was
like
dramatic.
Like gastric bypass or one of those?
Yeah. But look, you know, I would run into people who considered it a character defect. Now, listen, it's not easy for everybody. Oh, you cut, you become disciplined, you get it. To get the results needed, because obesity can be such a public health problem, it is increasing. This is one other path that has gained some credence, and it's understandable when you heard Dr. Oz and the president and everyone yesterday in the Oval Office explaining it's worthwhile. But it is not the be-all, end-all. Lars, you and I grew up during the space race.
Yep.
This may be the equivalent of Earth orbit, but it ain't going to the moon. And we don't want the prices to rise extra atmospherically when we get into the details.
Well, let me ask you this, J.D. When I see that kind of a price change, I mean, to me, it reminds me of, say, negotiating for anything else you're about to buy. I tend to use a new roof on your house, and you say, the contractor says, that's going to be $50,000. And you say, yeah, too expensive. I won't be doing it. He said, oh, I can do it for $40,000. And he says, still too expensive. And he said, oh, I can do it for $35,000. And you go, oh, I just found the real price. It was $35,000 all along. But if I was willing to pay $50,000, he was happy to charge me $50,000. Is that what we've got when all these big, huge pharma companies that are notorious for making a lot of money, they make a pretty good return, about average of 15% return, which is a lot better than other industries.
Well,
when they say,
wait a minute. Actually, it's much larger than that. The profit margin among big pharma in the S&P is 70%+.
On all products or just on some?
On their entire profit statement, if you check the S&P 500, it's more than double the other folks on there. So this and this underscores what's been going on with the American taxpayer doing all the research. And yet, in terms of money, Lars, this is the other thing. Take a look at the lobbying reports. Big Pharma, its lobbying arm, and also the American Hospital Association and the American Insurance Plans, those guys last quarter spent more than they ever had.
Yep.
So it's not only going on in Washington. The other trick you got to be aware of, they're going to Brussels in the EU and they're saying, yeah, we're going to jack your prices up a little bit so we don't have to lower them as much in America. There are a lot of things not to be cynical about, but to be cautious about. Now, I'm going to give the president the benefit of the doubt because I believe in his ability and his team's ability to negotiate.
And that's the way to do it. That's J.D. Hayworth, former six-term congressman from Arizona. J.D., thanks very much for the time. Are you...
He's up before you are, weeding out the right from the wrong. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, the Democrat-inspired government shutdown, which is now record length at about 38 days, has caused flight delays all over the country, and it sounds like they're only going to get worse. Already at least 10% of America's roughly 9,000 flights of commercial airlines every day, 10% of them have already been shut down by the government because there aren't enough air traffic controllers. There weren't enough when Joe Biden came into office. He accentuated that shortage by demanding DEI standards for hiring new air traffic controllers, even rejecting about 1,000 people who had already passed the test to go into air traffic control training. So it got worse under Biden. And now, under Trump, you've got the Democrats who say, we're not going to operate the government. They've now taken the government shutdown to a record length. The previous record was 35 days. We're now at 38 or 39 days, and it doesn't look like it's going to end anytime soon, although a lot of us thought it was going to end after the election in New York on Tuesday. So you got flight delays going on all over the place. As far as I'm concerned, this is the time to raise the idea, which we've raised before on this show, that the United States should privatize its air traffic control the way that Canada and other countries in Western Europe have done. For decades, the Federal Department of Transport Canada had underinvested in air traffic control. The federal government's process was so bureaucratically complex that it added 25 to 50% every time they went out and bought air traffic control equipment. Now, that's what Canada was doing. Well, they privatized air traffic control almost 30 years ago, 1996. They transferred all of the control it to a private nonprofit called NAV Canada, which became the world's first fully privatized civil aviation navigation service. I think it's time to talk about doing that for the United States of America. We might even make it Monday's X-Poll. In any case, glad to have you with me and always glad to take your calls. But I want to get to calls instead. We can talk about the privatization of air traffic control another time. Our X poll today, should we hold the companies behind artificial intelligence responsible for one of their products, in this case, ChatGPT, is allegedly or is alleged to have driven 7 people to take their own lives, including one teenage girl? I would say, yeah, we should hold the companies behind the AI responsible. Now, is the person who actually took their own life ultimately responsible for that suicide? The answer is yes. But let me put it this way. There's an idea in the law. I'm not a lawyer, but there's an idea in the law called an attractive nuisance. Let's say that you decide to build a swimming pool at your house. So you say, I'm going to get started on it. It's wintertime, so probably a bad time to or fall, so it's a bad time to do it. Say you dig a big hole in your backyard, planning next summer to put in a swimming pool, and you know that it's going to rain, that hole is going to fill up with water, and the neighborhood kids are going to say, hey, there's this big bunch of water that's in this hole in the backyard of Larson's house. And so they come over and they say, hey, it's a fun place to play because kids love playing with water. And then a child drowns. Do I have responsibility because I created an attractive nuisance? You could say, I never intended for the neighborhood kids to play in the pond that I created in my backyard. But if you create that kind of attractive nuisance and then somebody gets hurt or killed, you are at least somewhat responsible for what happened. So I think the argument is that if ChatGPT was created by an AI company that knew that it had flaws, and that some of those flaws might actually lead the ChatGPT, or in this case, GPT-4.0, to encourage people to suicide, yeah, you're going to have to take responsibility for that. Let's go to Ann. Hey, Ann, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. I'm calling because I want to know why no one is talking about the Senate and the House not doing their jobs. They're supposed to be working on providing a budget for the annual budget. And instead, they've been out of office. They're just sitting around holding, you know, all these little press conferences, and they're not working on the work at hand. They've been out of office for 40 hours. They're getting paid, and our flight controllers, our TSA people, our SNAP benefits, those are not being paid by the Congress, which is who allocates the money.
But
I'm really upset about that.
I've talked about it on the show almost every day for the last 40 days. I mean, everybody has been talking about the shutdown, and there's a very clear way to end the shutdown. All the Republicans voted to have a budget for the government that went through the House July the 4th of this year, so 5 months ago. And then it went to the Senate, and all the Republicans and a couple of Democrats and a couple of independents voted yes, and all the Democrats voted no. So there's a clear way to end the shutdown, don't you think? If you say, well, why don't we have seven Democrats show up on Capitol Hill in the Senate and vote yes? So we've talked about that almost every day. And I agree with you. The government is not in operation right now. We have lots of problems in government, including fraud in SNAP benefits and, you know, theft in SNAP benefits. But should we have the government back in operation? The answer is yes. And who controls that? That would be the Democrat Party, because there are seven Democrats who could vote yes right now, and the government would go back into operation. They have refused to do that.
I know, but all my friends are blaming the Republicans for not reopening, and it's like,
do you ask your friends, Ann, how can if all the Republicans in the House voted yes on a government budget, and then all the Republicans plus a couple of Democrats and a couple of independents voted yes in the Senate, there aren't any Republicans left to vote yes. So you know the only people who could vote yes and start the government up again? That would be the Democrats, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep. I think we need to talk about it more so people understand. Because
my producers would probably kill me. But actually, Mackenzie and Joel are great about this. But Ann, I keep asking people. I know the media wants to blame Trump. Trump doesn't have a vote in the U.S. Senate. Trump doesn't have the authority under the Constitution to vote one dime of money to run the government. All he does is run the government that the Congress voted to fund. And right now, there is no funding. Now, who controls that? The Democrats do. And what are they demanding to reopen the government? $1.4 trillion in new spending is what they've demanded. And it breaks down pretty easily. About $300 billion for expansion of Obamacare subsidies that are due to run out December 31st, and they should. They were voted in during the pandemic. They said we only need it for a couple of years. Let it run out on December 31. And it will. By law, it will run out December 31. The Democrats have said we want to keep those expanded subsidies going, even though the pandemic ended years ago. So your friends need to wise up, frankly. And if they were here on the call, I'd ask them, do you think we should expand government spending by $1.4 trillion when we're $38 trillion in debt right now? And if so, why? And why would they want, say, Medicaid for illegal aliens, which under the current law is illegal? But the Democrats have said, if you don't give us Medicaid for illegals and expanded Obamacare and NPR and PBS, we're not going to vote to start the government up again.
Thank you. I agree.
I'm glad to talk about that more, but I feel like a broken record at this point that is the way to restart the government. And when they say, well, the Republicans should negotiate, the Republicans have voted yes. It's the Democrats who are saying, we're not going to vote yes till you agree to put Americans a couple of trillion dollars in debt more. That's crazy.
The Lars Larson Show. Wherever and whenever you want it. Get the podcasts all day, every day at LarsLarson.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, when I was in my 20s, people were buying their first homes. And now Americans are waiting till almost 40 years of age. Is the American dream dead, or is it just kind of aging out of reach? Emily Hamilton joins me now, who's Senior Research Fellow at the Mercatus Center. Emily, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Hi, Lars. Good. Thanks for having me.
What should I make of the fact that, and this number is just stunning to me, because when I was in high school, and I know that was a million years ago, but most of my classmates couldn't wait to move out of mom and dad's house, not because it was less expensive to live on your own. They just wanted the independence, and they couldn't wait to buy their first house. And average home ownership came relatively early. Now the average age of first-time home buyers is at an all-time high of age 40, which means that I guess if you took the conventional 30-year mortgage, you're not going to pay for it till you're 70, which means effectively never. What's going on?
That's right. Well, in the short term, a few factors have made it harder for people to buy homes. With the rise of remote work, people who can afford it are just demanding more residential space and driving up prices out of reach for those who can't. Of course, interest rates are making it harder to purchase homes than it was several years ago. But the long-term factor making it hard for people to find adequate housing is that zoning rules enacted in localities across the country limit the amount of housing that can be built and specifically limit lower cost types of housing like small houses on small lots or apartment units that are just making it harder than ever for people to find housing that meets their needs.
So we need to that suggests that you need to address this almost at the local level because it's nothing the federal government can change, is it?
Well, very little. Just the federal government can maybe encourage localities to make tweaks around the margin, but it really does need to happen at the local level, or state policymakers can set some guardrails on the extent to which they allow localities to block out housing construction, because localities get their authority to regulate land use and create these zoning rules from their states.
I mean, the only idea, Emily, that I've come up with, and most of my ideas are dumb and they don't get to, nobody wants to adopt them, but I've thought, well, you have all these federal mortgage agencies like FHA and to some extent U.S. Department of Agriculture, but also Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, that if they were to say, you know, we're going to give the favored status to those states that will have reasonable rules. And I think you can define reasonable. I mean, there are a couple of markets that I've been watching from a distance. They're a couple of thousand miles from where I live. But down in Texas, Austin, believe it or not, and San Antonio have both dramatically cut back on the crazy rules and regulations. And that cut the cost. And they got a surge of new housing construction. And prices there actually went down even while demand was high. And I thought, well, there you go. There's the model. Now, if you're acting like that, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, and all these other federal agencies will say, then you're going to get, your folks are going to have more access to federal financing, you know, to back up your home mortgage. And if you decide to be like LA, where it costs almost 30% of an average home's cost to pay all the permits and fees to the government, you're not. And I would expect at that point, you know, the federal government isn't telling California what to do. I don't live in California. But if they said, hey, if you're not making it relatively easy to build houses, then you're going to be at you're going to get the short end of the stick when it comes to financing of mortgages. And I would think at that point, the people of that state would say, hey, we don't like that. Change the rules. What do you think?
Well, you're exactly right that Texas elected officials at both the local level and the state level have been showing real leadership on this issue. In terms of aggressive action like that at the federal level, the thing that makes me nervous about that approach is that we are seeing some real reforms happening in both red states and blue states. And so partisanizing this issue makes me nervous. Like if a Republican president were to do that, blue states might say, you know, we are even more entrenched in our exclusionary zoning rules, or vice versa, if it were to be a Democratic administration.
I see what you're saying. And I want faceless bureaucrats in D.C. deciding things? But on the other hand, what California is effectively saying is keep loaning us money, because every time you loan a California homeowner a dollar, 30 cents of it goes to City Hall or to Sacramento. And you say, oh, so you want us to loan a lot of money to people to buy houses because you get a cut of one third. It almost sounds like you're dealing with the mob, only this time the mob is Gavin Newsom and Sacramento. And so we're not going to let you do that. It's going to be harder to borrow money to build a house because the local government has just decided to take the VIG, take their cut right up front.
Well, and perhaps even worse than the local government taking their cut, whether that's in impact fees or other types of fees to build housing, is that a big chunk of this money is just lit on fire in delays and rules that make it possible to build the type of housing that people need.
Well, and not just the people, you know, I want to build the type of housing people need, but I don't know personally anybody who lives in Pacific Palisades. But when that place went up in flames, I thought these are very expensive home locations. They're generally owned by very wealthy people. And I thought they'll get to rebuilding right away. And yet that hasn't happened. And I think there's a reason. They're getting blocked by other people who say, no, you can't rebuild your house. I mean, the last time I checked, they'd maybe issued 1,000 permits, and they have, they have something like 20,000 houses that got destroyed in those fires. And you think if any place in America was going to rebuild quickly, it would be that area, and it hasn't happened. And I think government is almost 100% to blame. Would you agree?
Yes, they have made some efforts to ease permitting to try to allow people to rebuild, but it's clearly not been sufficient.
Well, and do you really think they've actually made efforts? Because I can't count the number of times I've seen people post on social media, our house burned down, we'd like to rebuild it, we've tried to get a permit, we can't get a permit, period. And it's as though, there's a deep suspicion that what both L.A., the city of L.A. and Sacramento one, is they say, we want to take some of the most expensive property in one of the most expensive states in America, and we want it to fall into the government's hands so we can build a bunch of low-income housing and housing for poor people and subsidized housing. And you say, is that really the place to build low-income housing, is on extraordinarily expensive property? Because that doesn't seem to make sense. It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, and certainly not if that property isn't going to be put to its most intense possible use to serve as many people as possible. Instead, we have all kinds of regulations keeping it at a very low level of development in some of the highest demand places.
Well, we've got a bad situation right now. That's Emily Hamilton, who is a senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center. Just so you understand the numbers, as of last year, just 2024, first-time home buyers had already hit a record-high average age of 38, and now the number is 40. I mean, is there going to come a time where the average person coming out of high school is going to say, I'd love to own a house, but most people don't buy houses till they're 40 or 45 or 50 years old? And by then, with a 30-year mortgage and you're 40-some years old, good luck ever paying it off. Glad to be with you on a First Amendment Friday. Always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Snowflakes, yes, you are probably going to be offended. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. This segment of the show is brought to you by Oregon Medical Centers, the regenerative medical specialists at Oregon Medical Centers. It is First Amendment Friday, so I want to go to calls. Nick, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
No.
Hey, Nick.
This is
Hey.
Nick, what's on your mind?
We are. Hey, I wanted to talk about the food stamp thing, and I kind of have like a unique, not a unique view on it, but I get tired of all the people saying, you know, like, you don't care, they don't care, you know, somebody was yelling about it's only $36, you know, out of your taxes, if the amount of money is even the problem. It's, you have, what, 42 million Americans on food stamps? Is that the right number?
Yeah, it's around 42 million. It's about $9 billion a month. And so they are right in gross numbers. If you said, because I think of it this way, every time the federal government spends $1 billion, then that works out to about $3 for each man, woman, and child. That's if you count all the men, women, and children in America, 340 million of us. A billion is about $3 each. The dirty little secret is that most people do not pay taxes. About half of all working people who draw a paycheck don't pay any federal taxes, federal income taxes at all. And so the load is a lot heavier. But if you want to figure it that way, if it's $9 billion a month to fund food stamps, and that's 9 times 3, about $27 for every man, woman, and child. So that means that a family of four out there is paying about $100 a month to fund food stamps in America. So that's $100 they can't spend on food. That makes sense?
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, kind of part of my point, too, is just for a little background here. I grew up in North Idaho on food stamps. My mom was a drug addict. My dad was a non-existent alcoholic deadbeat. I mean, we would have starved without food stamps, you know. And even as growing in, you know, as becoming a young adult and having kids, you know, I have 6 kids between me and my wife. And, you know, we were on food stamps for a while. We were getting, you know, get our life together. Things are expensive, you know, but we did exactly what you're supposed to do. I worked my butt off. I now have a pretty good paying job. My wife was a stay-at-home mom for years.
And now so, you don't have to be on food stamps, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And now we don't have to be on there when we're not, like, necessarily struggling. You know, we have a pretty good income between the two of us. We make into the 6 figures between the two of us now. She's about
Congrats.
To be a drug and alcohol counselor. She's
well, that's a booming business these days.
Exactly. And, you know, all these people just saying how evil you are. It's like, I have no problem with robust social programs like food stamps for the people that absolutely need it. You know, I would even go as far as say, giving those people that need it more, so they're more comfortable, you know, but there's so many people that just abuse everything. And I know, like, if I went and took a picture of my fridge right now, it's almost empty. I mean, my kids eat out of house and home, you know, on top of that. I've got 5 boys and 1 daughter, but that's not the point. I don't know anybody who's not on food stamps whose fridge isn't almost half empty all the time.
No.
And see people that are on food stamps, it's just completely chock full of garbage.
Well, and Nick, you can see that at the grocery store. I mean, I can't count the number of times Tina and I grocery shop together, and we get in line with somebody, and they've got a big basket full of garbage. You know, just real garbage food. Well, if you're buying that with your own money, it's not my business. But if you're buying it with food stamps or EBT, you wonder, you're supposed to be on some kind of short paycheck because you're on food stamps, you're on TANF and all that. And you're buying all this garbage instead of buying good, healthy food and stretching everything as far as you possibly can. I mean, I admire it when people tell me, well, I'm on food stamps, but I also cut every coupon. Coupons have kind of gone away. They used to be a real good deal. But, you know, okay, at least you're trying to stretch it. But when you're just openly wasting it in front of all the people who are actually paying the bill, that's disgusting. I mean, I really think it's disgusting behavior. It'd be like being invited to a friend's house for dinner, and they dish you up a decent dinner, and you take a couple of bites and throw the rest in the trash. Would anybody do that to their friends? And yet when you do it in the checkout line of the grocery store, I guess it's seen as perfectly okay. And then when you see how much fraud that goes on because people sell their food stamp benefits, they cash it out to spend it on something they want to spend it on. Well, in that case, you don't need my help buying groceries if you're able to turn $100 worth of food stamps into $50 in cash so you can buy whatever it is that you're buying with it. Whatever it is, I'm not supposed to be paying for it. Agreed?
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, and it's not just, we always talk about one thing at a time, this program or that program, whatever, but this is just one program of, I don't even know how many, that is just abused and used by people that we're paying for. And like I said to this, I was talking to somebody the other day, well, it was on Facebook, but they were, you know, whining about all this, these tax dollars and all this, you know, like I owe taxes to the state of Oregon every single year. I have to cut a check to the state of Oregon.
Yep.
I barely get out of paying federal income tax. And all these people, if you're on food stamps, you are not paying taxes. You're just not. You're in the income level where you might get stuff taken out of your check, but you know,
no,
I used to get $13,000
pay payroll taxes for Social Security, but that's all you're paying. That and Medicare and things like that.
Tax.
I'm with you, Nick, which is why when people have said, why don't we re-qualify everybody for the program? You know, have the person come in and say, okay, this month we're requalifying 1/12 of all the people on food stamps. Okay, are you in the country legally? Do you have the ability to work legally here? If not, no. You're not getting it. Are you able-bodied and childless and you're of working age? Then you better be working a job or no food stamps. If you re-qualified everybody, you could make food stamps more generous for the people for the short time they need to be on it. But for the folks who want to be on it for 10 or 15 years, forget about it. There ought to be a cutoff to that as well. You got the Lars Larson.